If Hillary Clinton is elected president in November, a very familiar figure from Michigan will be part of her move to the White House.
Our next president knows that a nation is a village, that we are one family, and in a family, no one gets left behind.
Former Governor Jennifer Granholm, heard there at the Democratic Convention in Philadelphia, has been a Clinton supporter in this campaign, and she's been tapped to serve as a member of the candidate's transition team if she wins in November. Granholm's been a two-term governor and state attorney general. Today she teaches at the University of California, Berkeley, and advises the Clinton campaign. Yesterday, current state Scott Pohl spoke with Jennifer Granholm about Hillary Clinton and the 2016 campaign. He first asked about the Democratic primary campaign and the impact Bernie Sanders' candidacy had on the process.
Oh, I think it was a very positive impact on the overall outcome and the platform on the Democratic Party. You know, Bernie Sanders, I think, was such a strong and forceful voice about, for example, student debt and college affordability, and the platform language and the language that Hillary Clinton has now placed into her own policies regarding that is terrific. He obviously really made income inequality the signature issue of the primary, and that has been really important in how she has striven to pay for the policies that she's putting forward. For example, using the tax structure to make sure that the wealthy are paying their fair share so that we can afford making sure that kids can go to college, or making sure that we've got investments in job creation or in job training. So I think he had a tremendous impact on what will happen going forward, and he'll continue to do that, obviously, with his voice in the Senate.
When you look at when you look back at the DNC and how Debbie Wasserman Schultz was handling things, the implication that there was a pro-Clinton bias at the DNC, how do you regard that, and how do you think it played out? What impact do you think it has now on the campaign?
I don't think it has an impact now on the campaign. I think that was obviously all as a lead up to the convention. It's unfortunate. It's unfortunate that she's a friend of mine. So I felt very badly that she was, that she had to go. Although I completely understand the perception issues, and I think that Donna Brazile is fantastic, and I'm glad that she's taking the interim job. But Debbie, she was a fierce fighter for Democratic priorities. And I'm glad that the storm has died down and that she has moved on, and I hope she's able to win her election.
All right, there are other storms, and we'll get to them, but I want to move on to the Clinton-Trump campaign season now. And one thing I wanted to make sure we spent a little time on is the mention on your website that you're serving as an advisor on energy to the Clinton team. Can you tell me what exactly that means? What are you advising her on?
Yeah, the policy teams that the Clinton Foundation put together obviously included people who had experience in substantive areas. And so I, along with Carol Browner, was the co-chair of the Energy and Climate Task Force. And so what we, underneath the policies that you see appearing on her website, was a lot of work, a whole big working group that went into putting those policies together. So, for example, when she says she wants to see 500 million solar panels deployed in homes across America, that came from that policy group. When she talks about this clean energy challenge to the governors, a $60 billion challenge to get the states to really up their game in terms of their renewable portfolio standards and the percentage of energy that they get from clean renewable sources, that was from the work of this policy group. So the policy groups now have sort of wound down, because all of the policies have been developed and are on the websites. But the work goes on in terms of planning for the transition and for, if she's elected, the first 100 days. So I'm also one of the co-chairs of her transition team. And that that work about how to take the policies that have been actually put on the website and make them reality is about to begin, and will begin really in earnest after the election.
You brought up the transition team. What exactly does that mean? What does a transition team do, and when does it do it?
Yeah, well, for any candidate who is in the general election, and this is true with the Trump campaign as well, there has to be a lot of work that goes into making sure that there's a successful launch of the candidate should they be elected. And with these candidates, so for example, Chris Christie was named as the chair of Trump's transition team back in May. So there's, especially if you're taking over from another party, there's just a lot of work that goes into making sure that you've done an agency review, you've identified people who could take positions, you plan for how to make sure their promises become reality. But with the Clinton team, I can just speak to that from personal knowledge. It's a very small team to begin with because you want people to be focused on the main thing, which is getting her elected, but you still have to think through how you are going to be planning to launch her. And so that preliminary work has begun with a very small small group, and it's based out of Washington, D.C.
It sounds like there would be a lot of work between Election Day and Inauguration
Yes.
Day. Would there be work after Inauguration Day?
No. Usually after Inauguration Day, then that work, you know, they hand over the binders full of policies, et cetera, to the people who will be assuming these positions and getting confirmed into the agencies. So once she's inaugurated, then there's a handoff.
We're talking with Governor Jennifer Granholm, who's on Hillary Clinton's transition team. I wanted to ask you about the current status of polls about the race, which routinely, of late anyway, are showing Hillary Clinton with sizable leads, not just nationwide, but in some cases in some states where it's a bit of a surprise maybe that a Democrat is leading in the polls. What are your observations about the current polling?
Well, I think it's reflecting reality in the sense that there is just such a huge question mark and animosity about Donald Trump. I mean, both sides have their challenges, but the thrust of his campaign, and you'll hear this more today even from Hillary Clinton talking about the divisive nature of his campaign and who he has embraced and given life to. For example, this alt-right, far conservative right wing, which is a white nationalist movement that has basically embraced and endorsed him. That, you know, her hope, I think, in raising this is that, you know, sunshine is the greatest disinfectant, and hopefully people will understand what's really going on underneath the surface. The fact that he brought in this fellow Steve Bannon from Breitbart News, and Bannon has been associated with these groups and has run this, you know, this news organization, Breitbart, that has people on and contributing to it that are clearly with this very dark racist strain that is certainly not the majority of the Republican Party, but there is this wing that he has empowered. And that, I think, is you're seeing some of that percolate up. People aren't comfortable with that. And so even in states that are very conservative, you're seeing a discomfort. I think it's one of the reasons why he's going to Mississippi, and he's going to North Carolina, and he's coming to Michigan, and he's talking about an outreach to the African-American community. I'm not sure whether that's legit. I don't think it is. I think what he's legitimately trying to do is to, you know, to tamp down the concerns of moderate Republicans and suburban Republicans who are uncomfortable with the notion that so many white nationalists are embracing the Trump campaign.
A federal judge has ordered the State Department to speed up a review of about 15,000 previously undisclosed emails that the FBI has retrieved from Hillary Clinton's server. As a supporter, are you worried about what might be in those emails?
No, I'm not. I think that those emails are largely probably duplicative of what's already out there, or they're the private emails that she didn't turn over because they were private. So he's going to review the State Department will review those and determine what is public information and what's not. But you've seen, you know, the 60,000 pages already that have been reviewed. The FBI has reviewed them. They already had them, those 15,000. They have reviewed them. I don't think there's anything in them of note.
What are your observations about the disclosures regarding supporters of the Clinton Foundation and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and access to her during the time that she was Secretary of State? Does any of that concern you these days?
Well, this infuriates me in many ways. I mean, first of all, this comes from a study that the AP did where they pulled out for half of her term, for 2 years of her term, they pulled out only the meetings that she had with people who were non-governmental entities. And it is true that some of them, you know, half of them or whatever, had donated to the foundation. But the question really is, what was the purpose of meeting with them? Was the purpose of meeting with them, which is what the folks on the Trump team have indicated or suggested, the purpose of meeting with them was because they were donors to the foundation. So did she meet with Melinda Gates because Melinda Gates had donated the foundation, or did she meet with Melinda Gates because the Gates Foundation is doing a huge amount of work with the State Department on health initiatives globally? It's the latter. Did she meet with Elie Wiesel, Nobel Prize-winning Elie Wiesel, whose foundation donated to the Clinton Foundation because he donated to the Clinton Foundation, or because Elie Wiesel was, you know, obviously he's passed now, was doing great humanitarian service across the globe? Did she meet with this fellow, Muhammad Yunus, who was a Nobel Prize winner, who got the Medal of Freedom from President Obama, who was working to eradicate global poverty and was an expert in microfinance because his foundation happened to donate to the Clinton Foundation, or because he was actually doing huge work that the State Department was doing and they needed these public-private partnerships or the partnerships with these global philanthropies to carry on the work of the State Department? So the bottom line is, a lot of these global charities that are doing great work are partnering with the State Foundation, with the state of the State Department, to make sure that AIDS is eradicated, that malaria drugs are available, that child poverty is eradicated, that young women in Southern Africa are not abused. All of these meetings, those kind of meetings, might be with people who run foundations who happen to also do work with the Clinton Foundation. But does that mean that that's why they got access? And by the way, that story indicated there was nothing improper about those meetings. These are all people that any Secretary of State would have met with. And my guess is probably Colin Powell and Madeleine Albright met with similar heads of charities and individuals who are doing work globally that the State Department was working with.
We've been talking with Governor Jennifer Granholm about her role on Hillary Clinton's transition team. Thank you for joining us on Current State.
All right. Thanks so much.
For Current State, I'm Scott Pohl.